flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At least one national NFL analyst thinks the Commanders should absolutely do whatever it takes to trade for Myles Garrett. You'll hear that coming up at 4:30 today on Grant and Danny. Welcome back live from Radio Row in New Orleans, ahead of the Super Bowl. You're locked into The Fan. We are sponsored by the law firm Kondorian Murad. From estate planning and elder law to real estate transactions and probate administration, their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. They'll give you a discount if they know you're one of our listeners with Grant and Danny. Beltway Blitz time on G&D, covering the Wizards, the NFL, and the Commanders, coming your way in just a moment. Danny, I got to tell you, the positivity about Jaden Daniels and the Commanders out here at Radio Row has been absolutely awesome.
I love that. We saw it here, obviously. It took this area by storm. And you'd see it on national television or big games or pregame shows or the NFL or the shouty shows or analysis shows, etc. And it was always so cool to hear it. But knowing that the whole NFL world was kind of gathered in that one spot and they're still talking about it, even though they're eliminated and done and gone because it's one of these stories of the league this year, is so refreshing and so fun.
Yeah, it's just been nice for people to not be joning and making fun. They're like, wow, you got a great quarterback.
Yes, we got a good team.
They're fun to watch. As promised, real quick, caller number 10, 800-636-1067. Every day at this time, ahead of the Blitz, we're giving away tickets to see the weekend at Northwest Stadium. So congrats, you're winning 2 tickets right now if you're caller 10. After Hours Tour, it's Saturday, August 2nd, Northwest Stadium with Playboi Carti, which is one of Danny's favorites,
yep,
and Mike Dean. Tickets are on sale Friday, February 7th, 10 a.m. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. Let's talk Wizards basketball. Varun Shankar covers the team for the Washington Post, joins us now. Varun, they do know that they're not allowed to win, and they're not supposed to win, and that if they start winning, it's really going to ruin my mood because I need Cooper Flag in 1-1. Why have they won 2 in a row? What is going wrong with this team?
They've shot well from 3 the last couple games, which hasn't happened much this season, and they've played some pretty good defense. Those are the 2 main reasons. I don't think you need to worry too much about the lottery odds. I think they still have a pretty sizable gap in the standings. And, with the flattened lottery odds, you don't have to finish worse to get first.
Yeah, I feel like if they only played Charlotte, I'm sure that's a city. Charlotte, Varun, they would, like, the Warriors' record would be in jeopardy. Like, they played great against those guys. But let's get to the trade deadline this week. This, to me, is always the story. I think they've had a couple of guys that have not played themselves into good value in trade, unfortunately, that I'd like to see moved. But what are you hearing? Who might be on the move? What might they get back, et cetera?
Yeah, there's 3 names that I'm keeping an eye on. That's Jonas Valanciunas, that's Malcolm Brogdon, that's Kyle Kuzma. With Valanciunas and Brogdon, it's pretty simple. They're on the older side of things. Brogdon's contract ends after the season. Valanciunas has 1 more year after this, and then another year after that that's non-guaranteed. Neither of them fit the timeline for this team. What's interesting, so Valanciunas, it's a very easy fit for a lot of teams. He can help you out if you need a post presence. He can help you out if you need a defensive rebounder. He does have some pretty apparent limitations when it comes to just his mobility on the defensive side of things, and he's not going to give you too much as a floor spacer. But he's a reliable player. I think he's played every game this season and every game last season, and you know what you're going to get from him. I don't anticipate the Wizards getting a first-round pick for him, just looking back on some precedent. I don't think you're going to see that. But he's someone that they don't have, you know, they have some other centers on the roster that could get some run as the season goes on. Rashawn Holmes has had some nice minutes here and there, and obviously Alex Saar is the player of the future at that position. With Brogdon, it's very interesting because he has this $22.5 million salary for the rest of the season. It's an expiring deal, so if at the end of the season it doesn't, you know, the Wizards have the option to resign him, and even if they don't, that money just comes off the books. If they choose to trade him, they could have to take back some degree of salary, and if you're taking on a multi-year commitment, you have to be very cautious about that. The thing with Brogdon, he's been super effective. He's a very steadying presence, can be a great backup guard for a really good team. He hasn't been healthy at all this year, and he's really struggled to stay on the court. So that's something that could limit his factor. So if you're Washington, are you going to get the requisite draft value that could validate you taking on potentially a unflattering contract? Kuzma's the most interesting because his value this season is so different. If you evaluate it based on this season, and if you evaluate his body of work over the last couple of years, you're looking at two different players just in the way that he shot and his offensive skill this season. But he's someone that can fit on a lot of different teams because he is versatile. He can play both forward positions. He's 6'10". He can defend. He can shoot. He can slash. He can do a lot of different things. So he's Washington's most valuable piece. The question is, does the rest of the league see him to the same value that Washington does?
Varun, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Just tell them to relax
a little bit
with the win.
Yeah, relax with that.
I gotcha.
See you, bud.
See you, pal. There you go. The Wizards on the Beltway Blitz. Let's talk football from Radio Row. Old pal Nate Davis, USA Today, covers the National Football League, joins us now. Nate, I want to start with Travis Kelce saying last night that he thinks he could play at least 3 more years. I'm going to set the over-under at 2.5 seasons. Is Travis Kelce still playing football in the NFL?
2.5? I think I would probably take the under, Grant. I mean, I know some people have speculated maybe this would be his last season. I mean, I definitely heard probably he'll play at least one more. It seemed like, you know, Travis knows once this ride is over, it's over. And, you know, so many players lament the fact that you can't ever recapture that locker room kind of feeling and fill that void in your life once it's over. And I'm sure he's got a good sounding board in Jason, who's already kind of made that transition. I think he'll probably ride it out a bit longer, but I would say max maybe 2 more years after this one.
Nate, I was talking to a buddy the other day about kind of the landscape of the NFC, and I was rattling off some of the teams, you know, that I thought would be good again, even if, you know, with some of the coaching changes and the like. And he asked me, what about San Francisco? And I realized I'd kind of forgotten about them just because they had one of their, you know, every so often they have that disaster year where nothing goes right and everyone's hurt all the time. And I actually kind of thought about that. I didn't have a great answer. Is San Francisco, in your mind, going to be big back next year and you know, not a team that's kind of an afterthought as they kept getting hurt? Or is this kind of the end of the run?
Yeah, I don't know, Danny. I hate to cap their potential in any way. Like you said, they have some down seasons that are usually kind of, you know, generally the function of injuries that had that this year. But, you know, this is a team that got to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo as a quarterback. So, I mean, I do have a lot of faith in Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to make them competitive. I'm not necessarily sure I'd make them a favorite next season, but you know, I think the big shoe to drop there too is, you know, what are they going to do with Brock Purdy? I mean, he's now eligible to basically come off his NFL welfare level contract and get paid. And I think that they want to do that. I mean, it's time to reward him. But of course, that's going to have, you know, that's going to create problems elsewhere. I think probably a guy like Deebo Samuel might be kind of a logical guy to move on, and maybe others. I mean, they've got a lot of guys with big contracts right now. And I think a Purdy contract or whatever they do at quarterback, if they possibly make a change, I'm not sure. I mean, obviously a little bit of a down season, but I think they're committed to him. But that's going to change the look of that team in some way, shape, or form.
Nate Davis, USA Today, with us on our Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny and Rita's work and the USA Today and all over their web offerings. Nate, I'm curious about Super Bowl 59 and whether or not your team, I just don't ever pick against Patrick Mahomes like a lot of people are, or do you actually still kind of look at these games as if the Chiefs are capable of losing and see the Eagles as a possible winner?
I mean, I definitely think it's a bit of a toss-up, Grant. I mean, I generally agree with what you said. I mean, it seems like, you know, Patrick Mahomes never fails in these situations. I mean, the Chiefs somehow won the 15 regular season games and two more, even if it didn't feel impressive in spots. But, I mean, they also never had that game where they got blown out or quote-unquote exposed or anything. I mean, you know, throw out the Week 18 game, of course. But it's hard to count against them. And I also just think it's hard to count against the continuity they've got there with Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, those guys know how to game plan wins. But I don't know. I'm still slightly on Philadelphia just based on how good they are in both trenches. You know, obviously they almost won this game 2 years ago. And then Jalen Hurts, I think, pretty decisively outplayed Patrick Mahomes, aside from the fumble. You know, you add Saquon Barkley to that mix. You know, the defense is a bit different, but I mean, I think his defense is better than the one they had 2 years ago. So I think there's every reason to expect the Eagles could certainly win this game.
Nate, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Okay, thanks.
You got it, buddy. Hit that local 53 sounder, Topes. Yeah, that stupid name is here for good, but whatever. I'm still psyched to talk to my pal, Johnny Cakes Allville, a newly baptized Jeeps. A newly baptized Washington football fan. Welcome to the flock, young man. Thank you for being here.
Boys, thanks for having me. Thank you for allowing me to be part of the Commander family. I do appreciate that.
You are most welcome. Should Washington be pulling out all the stops to win the bidding for one Myles Garrett?
All the stops? I mean, if it's a real bidding war and then you're talking like three first-round picks, I don't know if I'm crazy about that. I mean, I can live with two first-round picks because you're talking about if it's this year's pick, it's 29, and then hopefully this Commanders team wins another double-digit games next year, and you're looking at another relatively low first-round pick. You might have to sweeten the pot with some additional picks and or a player. But if the bidding war gets too intense, I don't know that Adam Peters is going to want to part with all that capital. Like, I would love to have him. He's a great luxury item, but I don't know if they're going to be in the mix if five or six other teams are also in there trying to pry him free of Cleveland.
Cakes, do you view the NFC Championship game run as kind of this magical stretch Cinderella story, or do you think it's something that is replicable? What are your expectations now going forward?
I mean, I'm not going to bank on that happening every single year, but I just think it shows everybody that if you hit on the right quarterback, which they clearly look like they have after one season, that sustainable playoff runs should be the norm. Now, you don't know how every season is going to work out. Injuries hit, you underperform, some of the lucky bounces that went your way, and there were a good amount of them that went the Commanders' way in 2024, don't go your way in 2025 and beyond. You know, those 12 wins could turn into 9 or 10, and then you're scrapping a little bit more than you have, but I just think with Jaden, all things are possible, and I think we should be looking at double-digit wins most years of the next decade. I mean, there's going to be some down spots, but I think the future is super bright, obviously, with Jaden Daniels, and I think this thing is sustainable, unlike the run under RG3.
Flixie, I've got a dynamic receiver. I don't know that there's a star available. Like, I like T. Higgins a lot, but I don't know if I can pay him to be questionable every week and, like, ruin my fantasy seasons, as he has so often. But to me, I don't think you need a great receiver or a dynamic one or someone that can go to the house to beat Carolina or to beat Cleveland or beat Arizona in that week. I think you need it for the Philly game. So to me, that's a priority. I think it may be lower on some people's list because of the aforementioned Jaden Daniels and how special he is. Where are you at on that?
Danny, you are speaking my love language, my friend. All I've been saying for the last 6 or 7 weeks is, look, Olamide Zaccheaus, nice story. De'Ami Brown came alive toward the end of the season. Noah Brown was a nice addition off of the Houston Texans scrap heap. But I'm sorry. With Adam Peters in charge, I need my number two receiver to be better than that mishmash of guys that they tried to fit into that number two role. I need explosive offensive weapons surrounding Jaden Daniels at all times. And we've all talked about this. They're in the window where he's making peanuts, relatively. Because in 3 or 4 years, that dude's going to be making $70 million, roughly. And it's going to be tougher to get that roster the way you want it. So, Danny, I am full steam ahead. Gather all of the offensive weapons you can to help make things easier for one JD5.
Cakes, I thought 106.7 The Fan Live was a blast and really good time. Loved hanging out with the Junks, B. Mitch and Finley. It's a good little event we pulled off as a staff last week, huh?
Absolutely. Kudos to you guys for doing all the cat herding and all of the wrangling of the different shows that were up there. But I think it went off without a hitch. I mean, I think the fact that it was you guys up there for a while, you guys up there with B. Mitch, and then you guys up there with us instead of everybody everywhere all at once. I haven't seen that movie. I've heard good things. Haven't seen it. But that's what the event was like the prior year. So I think this year it was much more organized. The people at the Tally Ho were great. The Q&A at the end where everybody's up on stage, I think it's pretty close to seamless, I would say.
Yeah, you know who else hasn't seen that movie is your entertainment guy, old Eric Pickle.
there's a lot of movies that dude hasn't seen. Yeah. I could fill a book.
Movies have been in theaters, movie not in theaters, any movie besides Hoop Dreams, which is the zing. But the one thing I said to GP the other day, I think it was yesterday actually, was there's no way when you get all eight attention-starved dudes on stage who are just sitting there with a chamber full of zings, it's never not going to be chaotic at the end. You know, like there's nothing we can do to keep that organized, that part of it.
Sure. Now, yeah, the Q&A, that part was a little bit wild. But yeah, like you said, like there's a lot of dudes that want to talk into the mic occupying the same space. But I think it was a great event. I think everybody that came out had a good time. And unlike the last time I was at the Tally Ho for a 106.7 The Fan event where I chucked a beer at somebody and they didn't catch it and it split their face open, this one went better. This one was smoother.
Better than that, yeah.
Yes.
Appreciate you, brother. It is always good catching up, Cakesy.
Boys, Danny, I know we're in lockstep with this. Commander stinks, but I'm a hypocrite because I'm wearing a Commander's beanie right now as I'm talking to you guys.
I know. What are you supposed to do?
You're part of the problem.
It's tragic.
Part of the issue.
I'm part of the problem. I am not the solution, Grant. I am part of the problem.
Cakes is always part of the solution. Sports Junkies, listen to him 6 to 10 a.m. right
later,
here on
boys.
The Fan every single day. Trevor Sikkema of PFF says it is time for the Commanders to go get Myles Garrett. That's next on Grant and Danny. Live from Radio Row in New Orleans, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Danny is back in D.C. I'm out here at the Convention Center in Louisiana ahead of Super Bowl 59, tracking down some of our favorite guests, and in this case, most handsome guests that we talk football with all year long. Trevor Sikkema of PFF stopping through to discuss a Commanders team. Looked like for a minute we'd be talking a lot about this week, but the clock struck midnight, Trevor, on old Cinderella.
Oh, it did. And honestly, it was tough to watch that game just because of the mistakes, right? The fumbles, the turnovers, and it was a big reason why they aren't victorious in that game, right? It was the rubber match of, all right, they took one against the Eagles, they lost one of the Eagles, and they were right there. And it's a team that they knew very well, and I felt like they were playing well enough to where, okay, maybe they could have been there at the very end. I don't know what would happen at the very end, but if you take away those turnovers, if you play a little bit cleaner of a brand of football, it would have been really exciting down to the end. So I think it's a shame that it felt like the Eagles didn't get the best of the Commanders, and that's always tough when that's the case. And so, just but you know, it shouldn't damper an incredible year that they have had. How, man, it just goes to show you, a little new ownership, new head coach, new direction, new vibes, new quarterback. Obviously, if you hit all of those things, and if you hit even some of those things, how quickly it could turn around when you get the right guys in the right spots.
I don't even know if this exercise is worth doing, but I am interested in the idea of, like, how to divvy up the success pie, so
yes,
to speak.
Right.
The Harris ownership group,
yep,
at the very top,
yep,
and then Adam Peters, who had a bang-up first offseason.
Yep.
Dan Quinn's hired as a second-time head coach and changed the culture, beloved in the locker room. And then, obviously, Daniels has this historical year as a rookie quarterback we've never seen. I mean, where would you kind of start ranking import, if that's a thing?
Yeah, so the way that I kind of go about it now is, like, ownership and general manager set the culture. The coach sets the floor. The quarterback sets the ceiling. That's kind of the way that I look at it. I don't know what that comes out to percentage-wise, but when the way that I think about these situations is you have these conversations. These are the fun conversations that you have with your friends out at a bar on the couch of, like, oh, you know, what's more important? And I think about how there is definitely a trickle-down effect when it comes to ownership and when it comes to the general manager. And you think about this in any organization, right? Think about any place that you work where you have some sort of hierarchy or structure of your boss and their boss and everything. A lot of times you take on the identity, the attitude, the work ethic of the people that are above you. And that trickles down throughout the entire organization. So it's important to have the right people at the ownership spot, and especially the general manager spot, depending on how hands-on the owner is, to truly set the culture of what the organization is. You then go to the coach. The coach, to me, of course they can raise the ceiling, there's no doubt about it, but a great coach raises the floor. A great coach gets the most out of players that you would say, maybe they're fringe roster guys, but for us, they're impact players. They're important role players. They're important positional players. And then, of course, the quarterback, it raises the ceiling, because even if you have a great coach, if you don't have a great quarterback, there's only so far that they can go. It's the quarterback that really brings you to the ceiling of where you want to be. So I don't know where that comes out percent-wise, and I honestly think that might be a bad way to go about the exercise. The way that I always just think about it is, guys at the very top, they set the culture. The coach sets the floor. The quarterback sets the ceiling.
Trevor Sikkema of PFF with us here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan in D.C., live from Media Row in New Orleans. What did you make of Daniel's rookie season, and when did you kind of start buying into how uniquely special he might be?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. You know, as a draft analyst, he was my QB3. You know, I had him ranked in the 20s on my big board. Very clearly had Caleb Williams and Drake May ahead of him. And I appreciated everything that Daniels did in his Heisman Trophy winning year at LSU. But I went, all right, you know, you got Malik Nabers, you got Brian Thomas Jr., you're throwing the slot fade, and you're throwing the deep ball a lot. Obviously, it was a fantastic, potent offense. But I go, okay, how translatable is that to the NFL? Of course, he goes into a good situation where Cliff Kingsbury knows what he does very well. And I think both of how they approach offenses line up very well. And you saw that this year. But I'll tell you, there was a moment, and I won't say that this was like the moment, but it was the first moment. Preseason game, they're playing Miami. Daniels didn't, I mean, he played like what, one series, two series, whatever. He didn't play a lot. There's a comeback route that he throws that was on a rope straight to his wide receiver's hands. Brilliant timing, full confidence on the throw. And I go, that's a rookie? Because when you think about comeback throws at the NFL level, they're dangerous. If you hint at those throws at all whatsoever, if you are late, if you are off target, that cornerback's going to undercut that. And guess what? It's a pick six the other way around. And nobody wants to throw pick sixes in your rookie season. And so I watched him throw that throw with so much confidence, perfectly. And I go, this dude's having fun. This dude's already playing free. He's already playing loose. Because you look at the other guys around the league. Think of Caleb Williams. Think of Drake May. We saw great moments for them, but they're playing a little tight this year. They're rookies. They don't want to mess up. They're seeing things new for the first time. It's often that lack of confidence that really shows up the most for rookies. And for Jaden Daniels to show that in his first, one of his first preseason games of action, to me, I go, okay, we might have something here. Then obviously the Bucs game, you know, you lose that game, but he looks pretty good there. And then you get the Bengals game a couple of weeks later, or whatever it was, the next week, a couple of weeks later, whatever it was, and you go, okay, this kid's special, right? I mean, like, then you go, okay, that was the confidence that I saw in the preseason, but for an entire game, when it mattered most, lights are brightest, going up against Joe Burrow, all that good stuff. So it really was a culmination of a couple of preseason moments that gave me a hint, and then that Bengals game that you go, all right, this kid's for real.
In terms of surrounding him, he's on his rookie deal, making no money. So there's an aggressiveness maybe that you can have for a few years. Offensively, what should they be looking to do, do you think, this offseason?
Well, I think that they were able to get a good amount out of some role players that were there. It was great to see the year that Terry McLaurin had. Obviously, Dyami Brown had a couple of big moments for them. You're hoping that Ben Sennett obviously becomes a big-time tight end for them and just a sort of a versatile piece along that offense. You know, Zach Ertz, great production this year, was able to play a crucial role in some key moments. He's not getting any younger. I'm not breaking any news by saying that. You know, I think the run game was good. It could get a little bit stronger, but I think that was a really important part of their offense this year. The offensive line, I think through the first 8-9 weeks of the season, you know, our grades had them as like a top 5 offensive line in the NFL. And then second half of the season, I was more close to probably like middle of the pack, a little bit top 20, but a little bit closer to 20. Obviously, the Sam Cosmi injury is tough because that's an injury that's going to linger into next year. So you got to think about that. You were already kind of thinking, all right, what's the long-term plan with Brandon Coleman? You know, are you going to play him at tackle? Are you going to move somebody inside? You're looking to draft another offensive tackle there. But when I look at this team, I think another stud wide receiver would be great to really be able to pair with Terry McLaurin. And then do you need to invest a major asset, whether it's free agency capital or a higher draft pick on the offensive line, if that's something that you need to do there? So in order to sustain that success for them, I think that's important. You know, there were a team that was reported to be in on Brandon Ayuk, so we know that they're thinking about it as well. They're looking to go that direction. I'm sure that they'll, you know, test the waters on T. Higgins and, you know, see if he's viable for them to bring in. But there's a lot of really good wide receivers that they could potentially get even at the back end of the first round. But, you know, that's not even to talk about the other side of the ball. I think they need a premier pass rusher still. They're in a great spot at the back end of the first round to be able to get one of those guys. You probably want another outside corner to be able to start and have true versatility with Mikey Sanders still, be able to play him as a slot, as an outside, maybe some moonlight plays at safety as well, just because of how great of a football player he is. And so that's sort of what comes to my mind with Washington. It's like, all right, these are the next steps for him.
Trevor Sikkema of PFF on Grant and Danny. What's your philosophy? And I'm asking you to speak for now, like the whole analytics community.
Yeah.
But no, more so you, honestly.
Yeah.
I've kind of come around on drafting running backs early.
Mm-hmm.
And here's kind of my thought on this. I was a never do that guy.
Yeah.
I now am more the never pay the guy the second contract guy.
Yeah.
But Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, you look at how some of these weapons, like I'm just viewing it more like I don't really care what position you play. If you have speed and you score touchdowns, like that's what I care about. Would you have an issue with them drafting a home run hitter earlier and that late first round, second round, whatever, at running back?
No, I would not. You know, I think that there are – I would lean corner, pass rusher, wide receiver a little bit more than running back, just because running backs are always so plentiful, because I think that's where the value part comes from. It's not like we think that running backs aren't valuable to the game of football. It's a supply and demand thing. It's a capitalism thing. It's how often you can get a running back that can do so many things for you. Every year, you have the opportunity to either draft one or sign one, probably. So, you know, the guys that are at the very top, they're special. You know, we understand that, but a lot of guys can be serviceable for you and do what you need to do from the running back position. So it's more of the fact that there's just so much more of a supply than there is a demand for exactly what you would need out of a bell cow back. But that's not to say that, especially if you get into the back end of the first round, because this is the other part of the formula. If you're drafting Saquon Barkley at 2 overall, his contract, his rookie contract is way different than if you were drafting a running back at the back end of the first, right? So you can't just sit here and say, well, you never draft a running back in the first round. Well, these are two totally different conversations. If you're drafting Saquon or Zeke Elliott or Leonard Fournette in the top 5, you are then immediately paying them because of the guaranteed money that's on the rookie deal. You are paying them as if they are a top 5 back in the NFL already, like right there.
Right.
So when you bring up the second contract conversation, you're basically already in the second contract. So if you are waiting till the back end of the first round, well, now you got a steal. And now you can get a guy like, I don't know, Marian Hampton from UNC. You know, like, I don't think Yasin Gentry is lasting that long. But, you know, like somebody like that, or a Cam Scatabo in the second round, or something like that. Like, that is the point of the conversation that I think needs more nuance. It has to do with the supply versus the demand, and then what the free agent market is telling us about how you should value them compared to a cost-controlled rookie contract, that the only thing that matters is where you are picked. So I think that's the formula when you really talk about guys in the first round.
If you're Adam Peters.
Yeah.
So Trevor Sikkema, congrats. Promotion. GM.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Washington Commanders. You did it.
Not as handsome.
It's close. You guys are both very handsome, but I'll give the nod to Adam Peters for now. What is your interest level in Myles Garrett, and what would you be willing to trade for him? I'm just throwing this out here because I saw like 33rd team had two firsts.
Yes. So that's what I think it is. I think that when you were talking about Cleveland, the only way they trade Myles Garrett, because there's kind of a lot that goes into this. Myles Garrett, from a team acquiring him perspective, is actually on a pretty team-friendly deal.
He's got huge 2 years of...
He's got 2 years, very low cap.
I think it's like 19 and 20.
It's 19 and 20, yeah. And all the guaranteed money is off of the deal. So the team trading for him is it loves it, like does not really care.
But I'd imagine has to extend him?
It's kind of... the answer is probably,
yeah.
But Myles wants to go to a contender so bad, he might not hardball that too much,
okay.
Because he knows how good he is anyway. So maybe it does come with an extension, maybe not. But the team that's trading for him, you know, sometimes you get these guys who have signed these massive deals or whatever, and you're almost, the trade price goes into, well, I've got to pay him a lot of money. So I'm obviously not going to give you as much in return because I'm going to have to pay him a lot of money. The opposite is true in this regard, because the Cleveland Browns would have to pay basically all the money. They're accelerating almost $36 million. I think it's right around $36 million on the cap if they trade him. And the problem is they could designate him as a post-June 1 trade, which that means you could spread the money out over 2 years. But he has like a roster bonus or a contract bonus that happens in March that basically neutralizes all that. So in order for the Browns to even trade him, you've got to jump through some hoops. You got to fully extend, I think Jason from Over the Cap was tweeting this out. He was basically like, you essentially have to restructure Deshaun Watson, you have to restructure Denzel Ward, and you probably have to cut Jack Conklin, even to make it feasible to trade him.
Wow.
So there's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through here, which get us to the price. What makes that worth it for Cleveland? And that price is, without question, in my opinion, two first-round picks at a minimum.
And if you're Washington... Is that too steep?
Yes. No question. I'd make this deal. Because one of your first-round picks is already at the very end of the first round.
Yeah.
The one that next year you're hoping starts with a three, right? You're hoping the number starts with a three. So you don't care. You're signing a pass rusher who's still in his prime, is one of the best players in the world, defensive player of the year caliber type of a player, and addresses one of your biggest needs at a premium position at a cost-controlled environment. I'm not thinking twice if I'm Washington, they have the opportunity to do this, especially if they don't have to give a player in return. You know, if Cleveland tries to play hardball about it and they're like, well, you know, we want Johnny Newton in return, or like we want a young guy in return, something like that, then I think that's really where the negotiations start. But for Cleveland, a trade for Myles Garrett only makes sense if they are tearing all of it down and they are looking to gain ammunition for 2026 to move up to get some sort of quarterback that they want, because they're probably not going to be good next year anyway. So I think that it has to be a two first-round pick conversation, because they're going to want the one this year to rebuild as much as they can, and then they're going to have to want the one next year to have ammunition to potentially move up to get the quarterback that they want, because it just looks like Deshaun Watson's time there is running out.
Trevor, you know, I've loved your work for years. Keep doing good things.
Appreciate it, brother. Anytime.
No question I make this deal, Sikkema said. One of your first-round picks is already getting to the first round. Says the next one might be in the 30s. You get a pass rusher in his prime, one of the best players in the world, address one of your biggest needs at a premium position. I'm not thinking twice if I'm Washington. He is ready to trade two ones for Myles Garrett.
All in.
We'll get Danny's reaction to that next right here on The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny, we're going to take calls on Myles Garrett as a possible option for Washington next hour, but you just heard the interview I did with Trevor Sikkema out here. I mean, he made no bones about it. PFF's lead analyst saying, no question I make this deal. Says, I'm not thinking twice if I'm Washington. You're addressing a major need, premium position, thinks the contract is uber friendly. Now, you probably have to extend him and give him a deal, but even still, because of the friendly nature of the first 2 years, it makes it ultimately a better contract than it would be otherwise. He's all the way in. He's going two first-round picks. no problem.
I totally get it.
Miles Garrett.
Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, we spoke about this a little bit yesterday, and I've heard some, you know, other shows and voices I respect and you know, folks locally, nationally speak about this too, and you kind of come back to the same thing here. The iron is as hot as it can be. Now, it doesn't mean that you're a player away, because some of what you did was charmed, some of what you did was incredible and miraculous and maybe not repeatable, but you're above a threshold of legitimacy and quality play based on the quarterback, based on some of your young pieces, based on the general manager that you would trust to unearth that the next Brandon Coleman with that mid-round pick, right? If you've got Vinny Mumbats in charge, I don't trust him with any draft pick, so there's no point in anything, really, right? But you've got a competent front office here in place who will have to find value elsewhere. You've got to find your next Terry McLaurin as a third-round pick or fourth-round pick, et cetera. Easier said than done. But they've already shown some aptitude in that regard. You have the rookie quarterback who is excellent, who is ascending to a potential MVP candidate if all goes according to plan. That a player of this caliber should not be available to you. I understand saying, yes, go win the bidding for that. I get it.
I do too, and I think I'm willing to possibly even change my mind after listening to Trevor Sikkema. You'll remember, Danny, yesterday I said I would not trade two ones for Miles Garrett and then have to extend him. But what I did acknowledge is if there's ever a time where I'd be willing to do something like this, it is now while Jaden Daniels is on a rookie deal. And because of that, A, I have some expendable money, and B, I should be more aggressive. So for him to talk about, well, look, it's a premium position, check. It's a massive need, check. He also talks about their data suggesting that Garrett is still very much in the prime of his career, that this is not much of a risk of a significant fall off, that you're not concerned really about him, you know, dipping in production. I'm not saying I would pick up the phone and say, can I please give you two first-round picks?
Right.
But I might be more inclined, as we talk right now, to be willing to be talked into that deal if I'm Grant Peters on the phone.
And listen, I'm going to explore every avenue, right? But my thought is other teams are going to be in. Like, if I'm Detroit, I'm doing this, right? Right now, I'm going, I don't care about my first-round pick this coming year. I've got everything I possibly need. I need one more havoc wrecker opposite Aiden Hutchinson. If I'm, you know, pick your team that's ripe and ready to go win a Super Bowl and could use a game wrecker like this, you go do it. You make these kinds of plays.
The only difference between me and Sikkema, let me say this too, maybe you can weigh in on this, is he suggested, he said, well, you're picking 29th this year, no problem. The goal is that you're picking in the 30s next year. Well, I think there's a chance they could pick 16th next year. I mean, I know that that's some cold water this week.
No, it's not the problem. It's within the realm, sure, yeah.
And that's a big, big difference, as we talked about at another point in that interview, in terms of drafting a running back early, mid, late, first round. So if you're picking 14th or 17th or 22nd or 31st, like, those are very, very different things. Whereas trading the 14th overall pick, the value is unbelievable compared to, say, if you lost in the Super Bowl next year or won it,
right,
and you're picking 32.
Totally. And, you know, to say you hope to pick in the 30s, well, hope ain't a strategy. Realistically, I think this is a group that's probably going to pick in the 20s. So your first-round pick, less valuable to you, or maybe some people could say more, given the fact that you need young players at a premium as you go out and spend the salary, or salary cap, rather. So it's a tough challenge just to make all the puzzle pieces fit, but this is one of those I break glass for.
Miles Garrett, by the way, 14 sacks this past season, which by his standards is down a little bit. Second in the NFL. Only Trey Hendrickson with 17.5 for Cincinnati had a higher sack count than Miles Garrett this past season. More on him in just a little bit here on Grant and Danny. But next, Thomas Dimitroff, who was the GM with the Falcons while Dan Quinn was the head coach there. Obviously, Dimitroff has been on our show before, worked with Adam Peters in New England for many years as well, knows everybody in Washington's building inside and out, always a tremendous guest. He will stop by next right here on The Fan.